Back in 2010, I was working on a project to fund our next generation of cloud control plan for our infrastructure as a service platform. One of those was cloud.com or CloudStack. And while I didn't choose it back then, if I had my time again and we were looking at this today, Apache CloudStack would be top of the list. Let's take a listen. This is episode 82 of Great Things, Great Tech. Hello and welcome to episode 82 of Great Things with Great Tech, the podcast highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. My name's Anthony Spiteri, and in this episode, we're talking to a technology stack, not so much a company, one that's versatile and scalable in the open source cloud orchestration world that supports multiple infrastructure as a service platforms underneath it. It can handle various types of cloud environments, including public, private, hybrid, and edge technologies. Key features include deep hypervisor support, which is very important in this day and age. Platforms like KVM, VMware, Zen Server, XCPNG, all highly scalable and in a multi-tenant virtual networking model. That platform is Apache CloudStack. And joining me today is Rohit Yadav, VP of Engineering at ShapeBlue, the former VP of Apache CloudStack and a member of the ASF and on the Project Management Committee. That's a lot to get through. Welcome to the show, Rohit.
Thank you, Anthony. A pleasure to see you and meet you. I've seen your podcasts in the past. Good to see you, and lovely to be here with you.
Good stuff. Well, we're on it now. We're together talking about Apache CloudStack. So before we get into that world, and it is a fascinating world and a world where I've had some, you know, historical interactions as well with it, which we'll touch on later. If you like great things with great tech and would like to feature in future episodes, please visit gtwgt.com. Catch all episodes on all major podcasting platforms, Google, Apple, Spotify. Please subscribe to that. Hosted and distributed by Spotify Podcasts. Finally, head to YouTube at GTWGT Podcast. Hit the like and subscribe button to get all past episodes and keep up to date with what's coming. So with that out of the way, Rohit, let's talk about your journey with becoming, you know, so involved into the Apache CloudStack and ASF in general. So yeah, give us a bit of an origin story in terms of how you got to be.
Yeah, so, the short answer is I started with CloudStack project in 2012. I was hired out of the uni by Citrix. I started in the Hyderabad office, then worked in the Santa Clara office for a while. But the backstory of how I got, you know, in that place in the first place is in 2010, actually, I joined CERN as a volunteer summer student. I was mentored by Dr. Ben Siegel, who's the mentor of Sir Tim Berners-Lee. Really exciting times for me back then to learn about technology in general. And they were doing something with BoingQM to sort of generate interest among the crowd about LHC, and they're doing something with virtualization. So that's where my journey with virtualization started. And when I got the job opportunity, I jumped right into Citrix, because back in that day, they were doing Zen Server, which is a hypervisor. I got placed into that team to work on Zen Server. And then the news kind of hit that, you know, they acquired a new startup called Cloud.com. A bit of history about Cloud.com. They started in 2008, and some of the founders had the privilege and the pleasure of working with Chiradeep and Alex Wong and Sheng Liang, Will Chan, and Shannon Williams, and the whole gang. I started there. I was just a rookie, started to learn about CloudStack, you know, learning from the leaders in the org as a sponge. And these guys actually started in a small garage. And the reason I know about this is because I got the opportunity to work in the Santa Clara office as a Tiger team to work on a sort of next version of CloudStack, where I would hear about these stories in during lunch hours from the founders. So Alex Wong and Chiradeep in particular were software architects, and that's with whom I kind of worked very closely for those 2 to 3 months. So they started in a very small, I wouldn't say garage, but a small office, so four of them.
Yeah.
And their idea back then was sort of a clone of EC2, sort of AWS, what AWS back then was started as S3 and EC2. They started with a virtualization layer, which they thought back then that they could sell it to hosting companies, because their idea of go-to-market back then was that, you know, AWS is going to get into the hosting space. So maybe we build a tool which will be used by hosting providers. And then they actually got telcos excited. You know, that was probably one of those areas where, you know, telcos started paying more attention to cloud as a thing, you know, as a utility, almost like electricity and whatnot. And then they got rebranded. I mean, initially they started at VMOps. Later on, they bought the cloud.com domain, I think from Juniper or some other company. And
that,
then
that must have been a great coup, right? Like, I remember that when I, we'll talk about my little interaction with them at that time. But cloud.com, like, holy, that's like that's like the mother of all domains, right?
Absolutely. And then that was a really strategic move, a good sort of marketing move by Shannon and the rest of the team back then. And they first thought, you know, they thought open source as a good sort of way to improve adoption. So they licensed their product, their initial versions under GPL. And then Citrix acquired them. So Citrix acquired cloud.com. They have moved into the cloud platforms group. That's what sort of Citrix rebranded that whole software stack as Citrix Cloud Platform, under the umbrella of which they would sell Netscalers of the world and Zen Server as the hypervisor, and Cloud Platform, of course, as the virtualization layer, which will work with all these components. And they pivoted again and they sort of changed the licensing to Apache because, well, in our industry, you can never go wrong with the Apache license. It gives people flexibility to fork the code and make changes, and you don't have to share it like you would if you were to stay with the GPL license. So that was 2012 when the code base was donated to the Apache Software Foundation and sort
so
of
straight
got
up,
licensed.
Straight up donated, like donated completely. Yep. Interesting.
I mean, of course, I think they maintained some secret sauce, which wasn't that big. So from my understanding, when I joined around July or August 2012, much of the work was done in community, but Citrix had this sort of, you know, transitioning issue, like what are we doing? You know, this GPL, now we are the ASF, and we have a private fork of Cloud Stack, which was Citrix Cloud Platform. So they were trying to do things in the community, get a version
I
there,
remember
and
this
then
now.
Put in their secret sauce.
Yeah, I remember this because obviously, you know, so from my point of view, I remember I was tasked at one of my, well, around this time, 2009-10, to basically find a cloud management platform for infrastructure as a service. Because before that, we were using VMware. We were just doing hosted virtual server. It wasn't really, you know, scalable. It didn't have all the multi-tenant aspects to it. So we were looking at, you know, what do we use? And back in 2009-2010 days, it was really only a couple things out there. You had OpenStack. I think Zen had an orchestra, which was, I think, actually, which has got links to XCPNG and Vates and whatnot. So it's all kind of interwound, isn't it, to a certain extent? But I remember being very keen on CloudStack because it was cloud.com. I remember it being VMOps. And I remember that it did everything pretty well, like in terms of deploying VMs, working with the networking, the multi-tenancy, all that kind of thing. But the reason why I didn't end up using it was for a very simple fact. It was because it didn't do the console at the time. It couldn't bring up a VM console. Sounds like absolute table stakes today, right? But if you think about EC2 and AWS, they couldn't really, they still almost don't do that. You know, they do it to a certain extent now. They do it through the SSH and whatnot, but you couldn't bring up that actual VM console. And that was a big part of why we didn't choose it and why we went down the VMware Cloud Director path. And that's a whole different, you know, trajectory and kettle of fish for me. But I do remember this, a lot of the controversy that was around when Citrix acquired cloud.com, what they did when they split it up. And we worked fairly closely with the team in terms of, from a competitive point of view, a company called Ninefold in Australia, which was an offshoot of Macquarie Telecom. And they were touting this as the next generation, awesome, hip hosting platform that was going to, you know, basically blow EC2 out of the water and dominate the market. And they were very, very big on the whole CloudStack thing. I mean, were you kind of aware of that, of Ninefold back in the day?
Yeah, I think I did heard the name of the company, and there are many, many such, you know, people springing up and experimenting with the cloud as a domain.
Yeah. And I think it's not to harp on the negatives, but that didn't end up really well because there was a bit of a bug that they had. I'll never forget it. The bug was that they lost some storage, as is usually the way. And then there was a bit of a bug in the cloud stack, which meant that any VMs that were turned off couldn't be turned on. And VMs that were on couldn't be turned off. And basically for about 2 or 3 weeks, they were in this state of that locked state, which meant that customers obviously couldn't turn VMs on. They didn't want to basically lose data. So it wasn't great for the company. Fast forward, that company, Ninefold, ended up folding because of a few different challenges. But from what I saw from that, the cloud stack, you know, got better because of that problem, right? And now the way that I've seen the trajectory go over the past few years, it's certainly a very trusted platform. So I mean, it's safe to say that the early days, there was just always going to be problems, always going to be bugs. It's the nature of what we do in this world, right? But I'm really interested to hear how it's evolved since then. And obviously now it's very mature and has got lots of good names as well that actually leverage it. You mentioned telcos, but I know quite a few cloud providers that actually leverage it at the same time. And obviously ShapeBlue, who I've had on the show, I had Giles on the show a couple of years ago now, you're at the forefront of basically making sure that cloud stack is in a lot of service provider community. So it's just an interesting history. So it's really cool. So talk a little bit about, you know, what happened, what was the years after that? So 2016,
right.
You know, and also the significance of it becoming an Apache Software Foundation license model.
Yeah, absolutely. So what the license and the, you know, or almost like transition, or we can say migration of the code base to the ASF, did was it invited a lot of people. You know, earlier it used to be Citrix code, you know, make all the design decisions, implementation releases and whatnot. So between almost 2012 and 2015, 2016, we had a period where Citrix was the dominant sort of vendor. You know, they were dominant in terms of the development they will sponsor. They are the sponsors of the conferences, meetups, and all those kind of activities you would expect. And a lot of customers would, of course, use NDAP Citrix Cloud Platform. They were interested in that. But this phase invited a lot of companies like ShapeBlue, like Schuberphilis, there are LeaseWeb, and there are other hosting companies, you know, companies both from the enterprises space, but also from the cloud services space, right? So we saw a lot of that uptick there. The ASF gave that sort of governance model, which I think is testament to be seen in a lot of the top level projects like Apache Cloud Stack, but also a web server, right? The Apache web server, Hadoop, and so on and so forth. So that governance model gave this sort of structure where anybody can come, you know, collaborate, and there was a path of, you know, starting from a contributor to becoming a committer, which means getting code access to be able to change the code. Then, of course, to be able to do releases and be part of the voting and governance model and join the project management committee, which is tasked and responsible for the oversight on the project-related matters, like releases, like doing meetups and conferences and so on and so forth. So that
can you explain that a little bit? Can you explain that and how that's so fundamentally different to how a normal company would approach that, you know, software development, release, and support of the community?
Right. I think there are pros and cons to both the approaches. What I've seen is, because I was at Citrix, I could see, you know, both sides of the world, and a lot of my colleagues, including me, would sometimes have a dilemma of that. You know, we are doing a product fork release for customers, and we also have a community. So where is our, you know, where should be our focus?
Yes.
So that was a thing we struggled with. Citrix struggled with a lot. And but from the other things that you wanted me to explain and talk about, the governance model allows anybody to come in and start as a contributor, right? So ASF, when you donate the project to the ASF, we start with what we call a podling PMC, a podling project management committee. It's like an incubator almost, where you transition your code base and you learn the processes, and you define the bylaws. So we started by defining the bylaws of the project, like what are the laws under which this project must govern. And the key difference is, instead of one entity, i.e. Citrix, making all the decisions, these decisions are then made by the PMC, the Project Management Committee, where the PMC members are from different organizations. So They can be from, they were largely from Citrix during the incubation stage, but then we saw a lot of people from different organizations, enterprises, telcos, service providers, those kind of organizations who had a you know, skin in the game because they were users of the product to begin with. And that sort of governance model allowed that everyone has a say once they have proven their meritocracy, their sort of commitment to the project by becoming a committer and then eventually becoming a PMC member. So that way, one party, Citrix, wouldn't influence all the decisions. You know, those key decisions can be release related, feature related, but can also be fundamental to how, you know, where the meetups are being arranged or conferences are being arranged. So there's more sort of Citrix over the period of time had less say in how the project would function. And that's what we saw between 2012 and 16. That's where Citrix was more involved. And afterwards, the cloud.com team kind of split. They went on to, I mean, some of them went on to do Rancher, some of them, went, you know, other places.
Good pedigree. So,
yeah, good pedigree. In fact, and that's when a lot of the other people could, you know, get in their way of doing things, and because we, it's more democratic that way. So that's where we saw Shapeblue, Superfluous, LeastWeb, and others kind of, you know, becoming more able to support the project in a more sort of community-oriented fashion, which means not just the releases, but also meetups, the features, the roadmap, where they want, you know, what features they want, and those kind of things.
That's cool, yeah. So CloudStack itself, so it's self-service portal, web UI, it's got CLI, it's got a REST-based API, seamless support for lots of hypervisors, Kubernetes, container as a service. It's got hooks into infrastructure as code, Terraform, and Ansible. Yeah. It's such a like sort of utilitarian sort of platform. So if you were to explain what CloudStack is, what is it?
Mm-hmm. Right. So the simplest definition is it's an open source infrastructure as a service cloud computing platform. And to kind of go a bit detail is it starts with the what the project stands from an ASF point of view. So the Apache software, the Apache CloudStack project's mission is to develop, maintain, and release infrastructure as a service software. That's one of the missions. You know, when you donate something, you have to define what's the mission of this project, the PMC members, and what have you. So that's our mission. Now, how does that translate in a day-to-day basis? It's a platform. It's like a virtualization technology layer that supports, like you mentioned, multiple hypervisors. So we support we have broad and deep support for various hypervisors, the three top of which are the KVM, VMware ESXi with vCenter, and of course, XCPNG and Zen Server, which later on was also called Citrix Hypervisor. Along with that, we have a broad support for storage technologies. So some of them are sort of, you know, default, something like Ceph and NFS and local storage, but also managed storages like NetApp and StorePool and LensStore. Pure storage and HP Primera, you name it, we got support for that. And now we also support object storage with MinIO. We support various other integrations and features that you can, like you mentioned, we got multiple support for Kubernetes Engine. One is the CloudStack Kubernetes service. That's our own inbuilt feature you get. But we also support CAPC, which is Cluster API provider for CloudStack, which is used by a commercial offering like EKSA. So Amazon's EKSA supports CloudStack through CAPC. Then, like you mentioned, we support Terraform and Ansible, multi-cloud libraries and technologies like jCloud and what have you. So we have very large ecosystem of software. And what are the benefits? So I've defined, you know, explained what CloudStack is and what the components are, but who are the users and where, who do we benefit? So we do largely benefit anybody who wants to build a private IS cloud, and they can then have their own use cases. You can build a public cloud. We have a lot of regional and tier two providers who are using CloudStack, like LeastWeb and PC Extreme in the past, and so on and so forth, who you know, build their own public cloud infrastructure based on CloudStack. And we have a lot of enterprises. We have a lot of telcos, service providers, managed service providers who use CloudStack. So that's basically largely what the user basis is like. And then there are a lot of people, a lot of companies, AT&T and NTT Data is good examples, who use CloudStack almost as a virtualization layer. So for them, it's abstracting their infrastructure, their data center for them. And then
which is vCloud Director, yeah, which is what vCloud Director effectively is, an abstraction tool, yeah.
Would do, exactly. And some of the very large companies, I mean, I can't name them because I do work with them at work, and they get upset if I call their names out, but these are two of the world's largest companies by revenue. So two largest companies in the world. They're all users of CloudStack.
I think easy enough to look that up then. People know who we're talking about potentially.
Absolutely. In fact, if people come, I mean, anybody go to their YouTube and come to meetups and conferences, they can see who's coming to give a talk, and you can make sense who are involved in that community.
But that speaks to the point that I mentioned earlier about, you know, the early days and the roughness of what you go through in the early days of a project and of a platform. And, you know, you could go either one of two ways. And the journey of CloudStack is that, it went through cloud.com. It went through, the Citrix days, the Apache days, to where it is now. And to your point now, it's being picked up and used broadly by top enterprises. And I think that's a huge tick. And I think some of the advantages that I can tell and I know from a CloudStack perspective is that, the multi-layered approach to the hypervisor just gives choice. Huge. And I remember that being a big thing back in the day. And if I was looking to build or start an infrastructure company today, if I was crazy enough to do that, you know, I'd want the choice of multiple hypervisors today, because look what's happening today in the world, right? So this is where CloudStack fundamentally has a pretty big advantage. And I'm not too sure that the broader community knows this, you know what I mean? In terms of because you can lump OpenStack, OpenShift, CloudStack, OpenNebula, all of KV, all of these get lumped together, but they are very different, right? I mean, there's a good question I get often and that we talk about and that I know is around. What's the difference between OpenStack and CloudStack?
Right. So what's differentiating between CloudStack and other options? I would always say that OpenStack and OpenNebula, they have their own strengths and weaknesses. So I'm still an engineer first. So my advice to all these kind of debates is go and try. You know, this is open source.
What we did,
it's only going to cost you some time if you opt for that. Or you can look at videos on, you know, go and try everything and see what works for you. So even though I've been involved and I'm deeply passionate about CloudStack as a project, I would say it's the best thing you should do. But don't take my word for it. Go and try it. OpenNebula, OpenStack, CloudStack, all open source. You just have to try it. Now, to answer your question, what is the differentiator? The biggest thing is CloudStack is a turnkey product, right? It's not like a jigsaw puzzle you need to put together. It's like a monolith.
Which is important.
Which is important, and it's strength, right? Because you install and it's just there. You want to upgrade, there's just one group of services, components you need to upgrade. It's not like a jigsaw puzzle where you have to run around. You need a very large team. You need months and months of maintenance or planning to prepare for an upgrade and those kind of things. So apart from the fact, you know, the things you mentioned, multi-cloud, multi-hypervisor support, multiple storage support, monolith, it's a good product. I mean, if you're a very large user who wants a very tight integration and flexibility, maybe this is not the stack for you, right? Maybe OpenStack and OpenNebula might be. But if you're looking for something that just works, it's just boring, because bear in mind, we are in 2024. We are not in 2010 and 2012 now. So this is not the layer to be in, right? You want this to be as much boring as possible, because you want to, you know, play with AI or containers and something else. You don't want to worry about your infrastructure as a service, that sort of virtualization layer. So those are the strengths of CloudStack. It's got the Apache license. So you have an open source software that you can take, you can modify, you can redistribute if you want. You don't have to share with others. It's vendor agnostic. So compared to some of the other stacks you have mentioned, it's highly, the Apache governance model makes it super vendor agnostic, right? Look at things what have happened in the VMware ecosystem, which I'm sure you'll probably have some questions about. That's something that's not the first time it has happened, and I don't think that's the last time it will happen. Mm. So you have to also look at, apart from the choice of software platform, open source gives you that advantage, right? It's free as a product. You don't have to pay for it. It helps you lower cost of ownership. But even among open source software, you have to see, what is the operational expenses of running your infrastructure with
the total cost?
the total cost of ownership, right? So we did some studies with people in the open source ecosystem, and we found that after 3 years of CapEx, third year or fourth year onwards, the operational expenses with CloudStack are dramatically huge, and people get a lot of edge over their competitors if they use CloudStack versus other stacks. So that's like a data point for you.
Yeah.
And we are also seeing that as part, so you've given example of Cloud9 and maybe some other companies. One of the key things I've seen is you have to have an open source strategy, but you also have to see whether that's sustainable for you, like choosing one stack versus another. How does that pan out over a period of time when, let's say the software is free, but then you're paying somehow, right? You have a small team of people, or do you have a very large team of people who manage and operate that, upgrade that, maintain that? I think those are the key advantages with CloudStack. So you lower the total cost of ownership, but also you have something which is just really boring. It just works.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing to have, right? And I think from the point of view of the seamless integration, the turnkey solution, you're kind of getting that from an open source perspective, for free as such, but obviously nothing's ever just free, so you got to work that out. But then under the surface, if you've still got VMware, you can do the KVM or whatnot, but everything is controlled, the multi-tenancy, the high availability, the networking, the multi-tenancy, it's all controlled by the CloudStack layer. And by the way, quite a pretty interface these days as well. Like the interface is really, really, like I think it's ahead of the game in terms of what it looks like. So there's obviously been a bit of an emphasis on the team to make sure that the UI is good, the control plane's pretty, because that makes a big difference, not only from an operational point of view, but also what it means for the end user and the tenants. You know, if you're an MSP, you want to give your tenant an IaaS offering that's looking good and easy to manage through a portal. And I think CloudStack's got that. It is interesting because underneath the surface, you're still paying for ESX, you're still paying for, XCP. And so there's all sorts of different levels of conversations that people need to understand or have, because it's a multi-layered approach to the costing. Whereas I think some of the other solutions, they more sell themselves as an all-in-one, you get the hypervisor, you get the control plane, you get everything put into it. So I think that's something that people need to sort of consider when they're looking at CloudStack, that top layer platform that overlays onto everything else.
Absolutely, and that's why, and I say that a lot of users see CloudStack as almost an abstraction layer. So you don't want to know or care what's underneath, and you also want that flexibility to take one component out and replace with another. So a lot of users, and in fact, at work, customers, they like this approach that CloudStack supports VMware and also KVM within the same availability zone almost. And in the newer version of CloudStack, we have features where within the same deployment, if you have multiple hypervisors, you can migrate VMs from VMware to KVM.
I was going to ask that question. I was going to ask that next question.
Yeah, but that's to say, that those feature sets and that capability is possible only because CloudStack has understanding and support for multiple hypervisors. So implementing a feature like how do I migrate a VM from VMware to KVM is even easier because your control plane has a unified pane of glass or abstraction layer for upper layers. So if people are, let's say they want to change in their strategy, they want to move away from ESXi or the VMware world to something else, this model, the whole architecture allows you to do something like that.
Yeah, and talk about the importance of Kubernetes and containers and in the success of CloudStack. Mm-hmm. Has that been something that you've been able to leverage to build on for especially telcos and organizations that are looking to integrate Kubernetes and containerization more? Because I think from what I've read, you can do Kubernetes or you can do containerized platforms just individually, right?
Right. So I think a couple of years ago, we started with an agnostic container as a service support, which we called CCS, CloudStack Container Service. But then back in the day, there was the Docker Swarm, Mesos was there, Kubernetes, and there was a fight, right? And Kubernetes emerged as a winner out of that. So we pivoted our CCS implementation with CKS. So we have a native support for CloudStack Kubernetes Service. And since then, what we have seen over the last couple of years, some of the users are using CloudStack simply because we have a Kubernetes support. In fact, we have multiple support for different engine through CAPC or EKSA or our own CKS functionality. And then people are also using Ansible and Terraform. So a Terraform user who's using a different cloud they look for alternative. They stumble upon, hey, we have CloudStack. So the interesting thing I'm seeing with the telco space, the enterprise and the service provider space, where people are decided to use CloudStack, not because it's a fantastic IaaS platform, which by the way it is, but because it's an excellent support for these Kubernetes engines where they want to, you know, they want to see their sort of go-to-market or their usage going up.
And that's important because Kubernetes as a service, from my perspective, hasn't really been cracked yet outside of what the public clouds are offering. It's either you're doing OpenShift on-prem, or you're leveraging an Azure, an AWS, or a Google, you know, Kubernetes service as such, or Microsoft, whatever it might be. So to have something that you can take and consume as a platform, consume as a set of APIs that you can plug into across multiple different Kubernetes platforms and containerization implementations, the same way that you were abstracting the VMware and the VM hypervisor between VMware, Xen, KVM, whatever it might be, if CloudStack can offer that same level of portability and just a single pane of glass to go, I hate saying single pane of glass, but I just said it because effectively that's what it would be like. That's got to be where you're finding success there.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there's a lot of opportunities once you can run containers with confidence and at scale on an IaaS layer like CloudStack. Then you can do a lot of things. Your app development goes on top of it. You can do database as a service. You can do GPU as a service over containers. So we have a lot of those use cases, you know, driving a lot of the adoption.
Is that okay? So in terms of that, so GPU, is that separate to, can you guys offer that sort of service now? Like, are you looking at offering the GPU as a service from the AI perspective for private models? Like what's in that world at the moment?
Right. So two things really. I mean, one is a point of sort of data for you, which is one of our top search queries on our CloudStack documentation is Kubernetes, right? It's like in the top three. So there you have it. And then a lot of these service providers, in fact, in the last CloudStack collaboration conference, two of them actually gave a talk about how they're using AI and GPU workloads with CloudStack. And there's an upcoming feature which will come in future, but people have figured out how they can orchestrate CloudStack where they can do GPU pass through either through a VM or through a CKS cluster where their containers can leverage that. So once your Kubernetes cluster or your virtual machines can, you know, use these GPUs, then it's like a layer above us. Like what's happens in the VM or the container is not our business per se, but we are happy that CloudStack can, you know, as the feature said, the capability through API orchestration at scale, people can do that. One public example I can give you is there's a talk by AT&T where they have shown how they do GitOps orchestration and you know, containers at scale with CloudStack.
Yeah, it's all very exciting world. I mean, I think about it 10, 15 years ago now, it's getting on, but this is almost what we wanted back then, but we've got it today. You know, it's a journey. It's been a long journey to get to a point where everyone is the promise of what these platforms offered at the start.
Yeah.
You know, at the start, it was really just VMs, right?
Bit of
abstracting storage, abstracting networking, pretty basic, but it's taken the best part of that 15 years to come to a position today where it's just really exciting that you can abstract everything and everything that's new. And we're building on the building blocks of virtualization of VMs, but now we're adding the GPU component, we're adding, you know, Kubernetes and clustering componentry. That then we're able to build on top of that, and we're able to do, you know, large language models and generative AI and GPU intensive tasks just through this sort of platform. And consuming it in the way that we knew we were going to be consuming it 15 years ago, but we couldn't back then because the technology wasn't all there. It's super exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So finish off, let's talk about the VMware Broadcom scenario, because Obviously, this year's it's been quite dominated by that since it closed. And obviously, I've had companies that you guys support. Like I've had KVM on here. You mentioned a number of different storage platforms like MinIO and whatnot. Like I've had them on the show, but specifically when it comes to the Broadcom scenario, how have you seen that change of landscape, and how has CloudStack been able to, number one, take advantage of it? And on top of that, how's it going to continue to take advantage of that moving forward?
First of all, I would say there's huge interest in CloudStack, right? The number of people coming to conferences and meetups asking questions. I mean, if you look at the project's sort of history, I did a State of the Union talk in the last conference where I saw in the last almost 10 years, the number of developers have become constant. So we are in a, what I would say, a plateau of productivity where there's almost like 10 new users every week. You know, there's more number of GitHub issues being logged than people who are, can actually fix at that sort of speed and run rate. So there's a lot of interest from different people who are trying out CloudStack. You know, you see questions on the mailing list about installing CloudStack. So, and questions around Kubernetes and whatnot. So that means people are interested in CloudStack. And I would say a big chunk of them are relooking at their own sort of, IaaS strategy, whether they want to continue with VMware, they want to look at something else. And a majority of them who couldn't afford the, let's say, the new price hikes by Broadcom, they are looking into open source alternatives. So they are stumbling upon CloudStack. And the way we are supporting that sort of user base is looking into what are the features we can do to support them in their infrastructure. So I would broadly speak of two or three features. One of them is what we call VMware ingestion. So people who want to continue to use VMware ESXi, but they have lost other tooling functionality, we have a feature in CloudStack now where you can connect and import, like upserve their existing infrastructure. Yeah. So you install CloudStack and you just ingest their current VMware infrastructure. And that gives them that sort of UI, that tooling and other capability that they didn't had either earlier. Or, people who lost being able to use vCloud or something else, they can now use CloudStack with their existing VMware infrastructure. The second feature is, of course, migration, where they can stop their VMs on the VMware infrastructure, and with a click of button, they can import those VMs from VMware ESXi to a KVM-based host. So that seems to be a very popular choice for people who are reconsidering VMware ESXi, the whole ecosystem in the first place. They are adopting KVM and maybe other, even storage technologies like Ceph and Look Storage, yes, NFS, yes, and so on and so forth. So they're looking into that. And the third feature is a bunch of things around the software-defined networking. So we are looking we have an upcoming feature where CloudStack can support NSX, but also we are looking into people who will lose those kind of functionality. How do they migrate to CloudStack? So
it's a big one.
Having ability to do BGP and, dynamic and static routing through CloudStack virtual router, and to be able to have, other feature and functionality. So we're looking into all those things. So with the current release, that's 4.19, these earlier two features I mentioned, they're already out there. People are testing and using them. We have got improvement requests, and we are working really hard to, improve those two functionality, A, to be able to ingest VMware in CloudStack, and also to be able to allow migration of infrastructure from VMware to KVM. And moving forward, we'll look into investing more time in basically listening to the community, what they want. Some of them may sponsor those features. They may contribute bug fixes or even implement the features themselves. So we're looking for all those kind of collaboration. And moving forward, the way I see it is there'll be still a big chunk of VMware users who are going to migrate to a lot of these stacks. And I'm optimistic that many of them will end up choosing CloudStack. Awesome. Some of them I work with at work. I can't say in detail, but yeah, there are a lot of large companies and users who are using these and leveraging these features.
Yeah, it sounds great. Like, I think the future of Apache CloudStack is set in stone because of everything that you've talked about, right? I think it just sets you guys up for the ability to win the market, which I think is screaming out for just that simplicity, because there is a lot of complication out there, right? And I think what CloudStack has over the others, number one, the ability to do multiple hypervisors. I think that's a massive tick given where we are today, and offer that abstraction layer. Thanks, Rohit, for being on the show. Just as a final reminder, if you do love Great Things with Great Tech, we'd like to feature in future episodes, please click on the link on the show notes or go to gtwgt.com and register your interest. Please tell your friends, tell your family about the show. It's a good show. Hopefully, you know, if you're not a tech geek, you get something out of it. If you are a tech geek in the industry, you get a lot out of this. We tie it all together. This has been episode 82 of Great Things with Great Tech with Apache CloudStack.